Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You tune into the SAFM Market Update with Money Webber. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at the latest developments from the team at Traxion. They announced today earlier that they would be putting in, as a start, 3.4 billion rand in investments into South Africa's freight rail infrastructure. And we're going to take a look at what that investment looks like and what it means for South Africa's logistics and rail. We also have a conversation with the Chief Commissioner at the International Trade and Administration Commission, ITAC, taking a look at import controls and tariffs around the steel industry and potentially around the chrome space as well. We've discussed this, the chrome matter rather, previously with the commissioner. We're going to take a look at some responses that we've been seeing from market participants in the chrome space, if we have time for that. We have a conversation with the team at SAB, taking a look at their involvement in the inaugural Live Golf South Africa tournament set to take place in March of next year. We're going to get a sense of what that involvement could potentially look like and what it means for the South African economy. We also have a conversation around the South African economy with the lead economist at KPMG, Frank Blackmore, taking a look at today's GDP data that came out that suggests that the third quarter of South Africa's trading cycle saw a 0.5% increase in the economy from that perspective. Then we're going to wrap up the show with an agri conversation with the team at Omnia, taking a look at what it is that they're doing in the market and how they're assisting farmers to better improve their businesses.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show, as always, with a sense of how markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Head of Research at F&B Wealth and Investments, Chantal Marks, to take a look at market movements and see what we make of them. Chantal, always lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. It seems as though the profit-taking continues from a market's perspective. We are into the second day of trade for the month of December, that is, and markets seemingly having one good day, one a down day. But in the greater scheme of things and in the context of where we've come from the start of the year, it could just be a day where markets just don't want to be in resources.
Absolutely, and that's certainly what it feels like. If you look at the poorest performers on our index today, it is mainly the golds and the PGMs, and that's really been a source of strength for us so far this year. Also, Prosus and Naspers coming under a little bit of pressure, and that was the other leg that really drove our market higher. It seems as if SA Inc. did a little bit better, the telecoms coming back a little bit, as well as the financials. That index actually ended in the green today, with banks finding particular strength.
Chantal, when you look at the moves that we've been seeing today, I mean, the sell-off that we saw in commodity prices led to kind of what we saw in the resources performance, as you mentioned, doesn't seem like much of a sell-off and seems kind of like markets are processing a bit. Is it the same for industrials? Is it the same for international markets? I'm looking at US markets there in the green, European markets also a bit of a mixed bunch, but Asian markets by and large were in the green as well. Are we kind of seeing similar moves across the board and outside of South African markets?
Yeah, I mean, it was actually quite interesting this morning when just before our market opened, we looked at how Australia's resources index closed. And there, we actually saw some strength coming through from the likes of BHP and South32. Indeed, BHP was actually one of the only kind of large, very large companies that closed in the green in the South African market today. If we're looking at the top 10 biggest stocks in South Africa, it was the only one that closed in the green. But yeah, I mean, I think that there was also a little bit of a shift, a little bit of a deepening in commodity price weakness as the day progressed. And remember, in South Africa, we are heavily weighted towards gold and PGMs, and that is not necessarily the case in the Australian market. But if we look at currencies and how the currencies, the biggest currencies in the world have fared today, The rand was notably weak, but some of the other weaker currencies were also commodity producers, the Colombian peso coming under a little bit of pressure as well. So it could just be that. It could just be that there's a difference in terms of the timing, because as the day progresses, things change and we'll see what the Aussie market does overnight, and what those Southeast Asian economies like or markets like Indonesia do overnight as well.
Chantal, I noted that we are also seeing quite a bit of quiet on the SENS side of things, but we're seeing a couple of dealings from directors' perspectives across various companies. It's not just today. I've been noting it for almost since the end of last week. Have you been noticing or picking up on anything from that perspective that stands out? I want to get your thoughts on that, but also on perhaps the voluntary update that we got from First Rand today.
Yeah, I mean, director dealings have certainly been quite busy. I think it's a function of where we are in terms of the time of the year. In terms of selling, I don't usually put too much weight on it. People could literally just be selling in order to take a holiday in December. They could be selling to buy a house. Where I find the most interest is in looking at directors buying. And we've seen the management team at 91 buy their stock quite heavily, and they've got a vehicle in which they house those that stock, and they've been buying quite heavily. Dr. Chris Evisa is buying up a lot of Brait, which I also thought was quite interesting. And then quite a small cap share, but Vunani, their CEO, has been buying small increments probably for the last 2 or 3 months, and that I also thought was pretty interesting. It's almost every day that you see his name popping up on director dealings. So obviously they are quite positive in terms of the prospects for their respective companies. And they are taking this opportunity, or the opportunity that's been presented to them probably after closed periods, to buy up some of that stock in the market.
Speaking of buying, I remember, I think I saw it yesterday, the team at Novari buying up some of the stake that was sitting with one of their partners. Management buyout there, it certainly presents some interesting conversations to be had there. Chantal, let's take a look at the rand. We are at around 17.12-ish. I got a call yesterday from Makwe Masilela saying that he sees the rand ending around 17.15. I want to ask you the same question I asked him yesterday, was do you see us breaking that 17 rand level before the end of the year? And do you see us closing closer to 17 Rand or 17.50 at this point?
Well, that is a very, very difficult question, because the Rand does what the Rand does. But certainly the trend is towards strengthening. There's an important technical level to actually watch before you breach 17, and that's 17.05. But you want the Rand to stay under 17.05 for a few days. And that would be a kind of a signal that the Rand could strengthen further. I think if you look at December's over the very long term, the rand does tend to appreciate against the US dollar over a December. It's a function of kind of risk-off sentiment, that good old Santa rally that everyone waits for every December, but it doesn't necessarily happen every December. So just given seasonality and kind of the technical story at the moment, I would also imagine the rand would continue strengthening, probably breach the 17 mark, and then your next stop is 16.45, I think, which is actually quite a bit stronger. But as I said, the rand does what the rand does, right? And it depends on market sentiment. If we see a sustained fearfulness in the market, because we're still in fear territory, you could see the rand sell off into the end of the year, although that would not be the norm.
The Rand does what it does, and we'll see what that looks like as we approach the end of the year. I think Chantal and I will have one final conversation, taking a look at perhaps some of her favorite markets or favorite stocks throughout the year. But for now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the head of research at F&B Wealth and Investments, Chantal Marks, for joining us to share her insights around market movements today and potentially what markets might be looking at this late in the year.
On the farm, every season brings challenges. Will the rain come? Will the soil deliver enough? But I'm not facing those challenges alone. With Omnia by my side, I receive more than fertilizer. I have access to science, innovative solutions, and people who care about my success.
At Omnia, your best harvest is our greatest achievement. Together we grow more than crops, we grow futures. Contact Omnia today and start growing your future.
Recent changes to the JSE's all-share index, which captures the local market's pulse, have reduced the dominance of global giants and boosted the influence of local shares. This evolution reflects real shifts in the economy, capital flows, and investor demand. Tomorrow evening at 6:45, Alan Gray's Horatia Naidu McCarthy joins me on the SAFM Market Update to unpack the reasons for the latest changes to the all-share index and why they matter to investors. Brought to you by Alan Gray. More than 50 years of long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized FSP.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Around lunchtime today, Traxion, the private rail service provider that operates on the African continent, had a press briefing. And in that briefing, they informed the market that they would be making a 3.4 billion rand initial investment in South Africa's freight rail, with potentially a 2.4 billion rand further future investment to come later down the line. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the Chief Executive Officer at Attraction, James Holly, joins me on the line now to see what to make of it. James, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Big announcement, certainly a big commitment to South African freight rail. Tell us about this investment and where it's going to be focused.
Jimmy, thanks very much and good to talk to you. So we operate in the Cape Gauge environment in South Africa and in Southern Africa. And there's a relatively limited number of countries around the world that operate on the same gauge. And because of that, the availability of high-quality second-hand locomotives around the world is relatively limited. New Zealand is one of the countries that also operate in the Cape Gauge. And Kiwi Rail, the government operator in New Zealand, has decided to replace their Wabtec fleet with a new low emissions fleet. And we have acquired locomotives from them in the past, and so the opportunity came for us to acquire that fleet. It's a very rare opportunity. You know, in my sort of circa 20 years in the industry, I haven't come across an opportunity of this nature to acquire this many locomotives. After the opportunity came across us, we then are partnering with Wabtec, the world's biggest and I think sort of preeminent diesel locomotive manufacturer around the world, to have a look at what upgrades we could do on these locomotives. And we came up with a program that we think makes really outstanding sense. The outcome of it is we're going to have extremely high capacity and very reliable locomotives in South Africa, with the first locomotives and operating within the next 12 months, but delivering them at a very cost-effective price into the market. And that for us was an opportunity that we couldn't forego. And so we've presented it to shareholders. We've reached financial close and the project's up and running.
Now, James, we're talking about 46 locomotives and almost 1,000 wagons here. What does this mean for the infrastructure that's going to then be put into South African freight rail? I get the sense that because of the fact that you operate in the Cape Gauge environment, you've got slightly narrower tracks that you're dealing with, and those conditions mean that you need to optimize your operations. How is this going to affect what you do in South Africa and potentially what you're able to add towards the South African environment?
So I think that, you know, to my mind, I think there are a few really exciting parts and elements to this project. The first is that, you know, in March 2022, Cabinet approved a new national rail policy. And it was the first rail policy we've really had in the country in history. And it introduced sweeping changes for our railways. The famous transit monopoly of more than 100 years was effectively reversed through that policy with the introduction of competition on rail. Since then, we've had various different enabling legislation that's been passed. The Regulation of Transport Bill was other, the Freight was one, the Freight Logistics Roadmap, the PSP framework were others. And those have led to a position where we're in a position now with the confidence to make the investment. Reform is one thing, but without investment, reform is nothing. So the first exciting part of this project for me is that this is the first time in South Africa's history that you've got a significant investment into private freight rail capacity in the country. to offer competitive rail services. The second part of this,
Go on, James.
The second part of this is that we've got about 79% of our procurement is with local suppliers. And about 60% is local content. So a really meaningful project for the South African rail industry. And then lastly, of course, you get the upstream economic benefit, which is, at the end of the day, the most important element of rail reform in the country. You know, the upstream economy employs 16 million people. And I think the rail industry ourselves, we employ about 100,000. And it's that upstream economy that stand on the back of network industries. And our railways are network industries. And the competitiveness of our railways has a direct impact on the competitiveness of the upstream economy. And that, for me, is the most important element of this project, because it's the first step into this extremely, into a competitive rail environment in the country.
James, you touched on the fact that you reached financial close on the project ahead of rolling it out and ahead of making the announcement. I'm interested to know how a project like this even gets financed and what goes into kind of raising the 3.4 billion and I suppose the additional 2.4 billion that will later be rolled out.
Like most projects, Jimmy, it's debt and equity. We have closed the first phase of our equity raise for this project, and we closed that on Monday last week. And then on the debt side, we have selected Absa as the primary banker, with Standard Bank in support. At this stage, we're going with a lot more equity than we would normally go with a project of this nature. But that's in order to ensure we're adequately protected for the first phase of delivery of this project. We'll refinance a lot of that equity into further expansion in the future. And part of that 2.4 billion rand project that we've got planned as a follow-up, we would certainly be looking to refinance some of the heavy equity that we put into this project into future expansion.
James, what are we looking at from a jobs perspective? I can imagine the investment would be coming alongside the ability to create jobs, expand on the jobs you existingly provide in the market. Is this going to be something that's going to allow you to help secure more jobs? I can imagine it definitely does secure more security around our freight rails network within the South African environment.
So we'll be employing 662 people. That's driver crews, technicians, and the support around those crews and technicians. Most of those people, the vast majority of those people, will go through our traction training center, which is government certified and now 20 years old, and will all be highly skilled people, which is, you know, really good. But I think the truly exciting part of this comes back to the upstream benefits. You know, through the engagement with the customers that we've been talking to for our investments into South Africa, we estimate that there's about a 5x multiplier for every job that we create in the upstream economy, of 5 jobs in the upstream economy. What then also, of course, comes as jobs in the downstream economy. You know, we're going to be placing orders of about 207 million rand with the small and medium enterprises that we've worked with, some in some cases over decades, to service our key component parts into our assets. They'll be getting significant orders from us. We'll be placing 1.6 billion rand of wagon orders with South African manufacturers. Those are additional jobs that will be created as well. So 662 direct jobs, significantly more upstream, and obviously further contributions downstream. So it gives you a sense of the sort of enabling role that railways can play into an economy.
James, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts around when we expect this to be fully operational. Understandably, there's going to be some phased-in operations here. We have to wait for the imported wagons and trains to arrive or locomotives to arrive, but surely we can kind of hope that, I guess, by 2030, everything will be up and running?
The first train will be operating by this time next year. And then the last trains will be operating in the first quarter of 2028. And that, to me, really is a great part of this project, because any new build locomotive program and building brand new locomotives from scratch, the first locomotives will be delivered in 2028, if the deposits were paid now, and there's obviously a very long fundraising and procurement process around new locomotives. So these locomotives will come to market a lot sooner than anything else, and I think that's a really exciting part of this project.
Significant investment going into South Africa's freight rail network, and we're going to hopefully reap the benefits of that in many, many years to come. We're going to leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Attraction, James Holly, for joining us to take a look at this and what their investment looks like.
On the farm, every season brings challenges. Will the rain come? Will the soil deliver enough? But I'm not facing those challenges alone. With Omnia by my side, I receive more than fertilizer. I have access to science, innovative solutions, and people who care about my success.
At Omnia, your best harvest is our greatest achievement. Together we grow more than crops, we grow futures. Contact Omnia today and start growing your future.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The steel sector is under interesting review at this point. This is a sector that has struggled for quite some time, and we've seen the likes of some of the participants in the space looking to potentially close down their businesses, cut some jobs, and now we're facing a potential review of some of the export tariffs related to the space and even some of the import tariffs. For more on this, we're joined on the line by the International Trade and Administration Commission. Of course, they handle the bulk of the work where it relates to determining the tariffs and ensuring that we have fair and competitive tariffs in the global market. I'm joined by the Chief Commissioner at ITAC, Ayabonga Qawe, to see what we make of these developments and what they mean for the steel space. Chief Commissioner, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Let's start with an understanding of the review that's currently in place and what the potential options might be as a result of it.
Evening to you, Jimmy, and good evening to your listeners. Always a pleasure catching up with you, and thank you so much for giving us the time. Jimmy, you would know, and I think we've spoken before on this platform, about the review that we've been busy with since March of this year. And it was a review looking at a few elements, one of which had been the increase in ordinary customs duties across specific products that are contained in Chapter 72, 73, and 82 and 83 of the tariff book. Also, consideration in light of the narrowing of the product diversity of what we produce in South Africa, rebate measures, which would allow for the rebating of some of these duties in instances where some downstream users wish to import. And then the last category of things that we were reviewing related to the extension of certain products and their inclusion into what is called the import control list. And that's the list of goods where, if you wish to import them into the country, you would have to apply for a license or a permit or authorization from the commission prior to you being able to clear those goods. And we've been running with this process, as I said, since March. We issued in August a preliminary determination around some of these areas. And subsequent to us publishing that in August, we then received an additional set of submissions, around 109 written submissions, that were now beginning to flag additional products that they felt ought to be incorporated into the scope of this review. We've had to then do one of two things. The first is to ensure that the products we had listed in the first preliminary finding that we'd issued in August, that those are concluded, and we've already sent a recommendation to the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition for his attention on those ones. And we then subsequently had to publish at the end of last month, on the 21st of November, the other products that were part of that 109 written submissions. And this is anything from wire to rope to cable to springs to heavy structures to tubes and piping and a range of other products in terms of bars, rod, nails, and so on, that industry is suggesting be placed under import control. So a bit of a mammoth task here, Jimmy, but we certainly had to give some opportunity to those who've come late to the party for them to flag some of the products. And we've given a period for about 2 weeks for people to comment. And then thereafter, we'll probably make sense of that additional list and subsequently send a supplementary recommendation to the minister.
It's always nice to see that ITAC and other organizations take into consideration what it is that industry provides as feedback. Commissioner, while I have you, and speaking of those feedback conversations, the last time you and I caught up, we caught up around the chrome market and the chrome space, or at least around the tariffs related to that. We've seen some very interesting and lively feedback from the chrome industry. I want to get your thoughts on just what's been responded to there. Understandably, of course, you're still in an engagement process, and I'm not expecting any commitments from ITAC's perspective, but just your thoughts around how the engagement is unfolding with industry and the players in the industry and what their concerns are.
Yeah, look, I mean, as you correctly say, we issued last, when I spoke to you, we had issued, the Minister of Trade and Industry and Competition had issued a gazette regarding his consideration in law to incorporate chrome under export control, flowing from a cabinet decision in June. And I think it's important for us to underscore for the listeners, Jimmy, that the government is considering a package of measures. Export controls is one part of it. There's also consideration of an export tax, which the Treasury is looking at. And then, of course, a consideration of energy pricing solution, which I would argue is the fulcrum of the package, which the Department of Electricity and the Minister there is dealing with. And really, this package is the subject of our ongoing engagements with industry, because our sense is that we've got a massive challenge of smelters closing all the time. You would have heard from Tharisa over the last day or so, and even Merafe and a few other firms in some of the guidance they would have given to the market, that we are already in extra time as it relates to some of these issues. And so those engagements with industry are also taking on an urgency, that it is important for us to really bring some finality to some of these package of measures in order to ensure that the numerous smelters that are idling and that have been mothballed are brought back into operation, and similarly that our stainless steel sector downstream is able to get security of supply of ferro alloys that it needs in order to make some of the steel that it makes.
Commissioner, before I let you go, we've looked at the chrome space as well as the steel space, and it seems as though, as you alluded to now, the common element here is that we are facing markets or industries that are slowing down that we can ill afford to slow down, especially if we hope to continue industrializing South Africa. I want to get your thoughts perhaps on the role that ITAC has played historically and how much more important that role now becomes, understanding that a lot of what is done at or within your office and within the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition could potentially save these sectors.
Well, I don't know about potentially saving the sectors, but suffice to say, Jimmy, that the Commission, ITAC, is seized with investigating amendments to the tariff schedule. And tariffs as import taxes can only do so much. They can effectively tilt the terms on which demand for the steel we produce in the country is framed domestically. But I think you would know, Jimmy, that in steel in particular, the problem we have is not unique to South Africa. It is a global challenge of chronic rather than episodic overcapacity. And two examples of this are of interest. In the last week or so, ArcelorMittal in France has been faced in the lower houses of parliament there by a motion looking to, for instance, nationalize ArcelorMittal there. We saw earlier on in the year in the United Kingdom, Scunthorpe, where the United Kingdom government used its own golden share to effectively take a stake in that company. So it's quite clear that many governments, including the South African government, are really thinking through innovative ways to try and intervene in the steel market in light of this crisis of overproduction we face. In our case, it's included a combination of trade measures. It's also included some capital structure related interventions, if you look at what the IDC has been involved in. And certainly dialogue continues about how we not only save the integrated steel making capability we have, but in so doing also facilitates a once in a epoch energy and even input transition in the sector, greening the kind of steel that we produce, so that we continue to remain competitive in some of the export markets we sell into. And so it's a mammoth task. And I must say, Jimmy, we bring our own small anvil into that particular exercise. And we certainly hope, to the extent that we are able to have some control over some of these measures, that we can bring them to the party to try and ensure that our steel sector is more competitive, and that as it undergoes all of these changes, we retain jobs, we retain investment, but we also expand capability and the diversity of the products that we produce.
Maintaining capabilities and ensuring that industries are protected as much as possible. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Chief Commissioner at the International Trade and Administration Commission, Ayabonga Cawe, for joining us to take a look at the steel and chrome industries and what reviews are currently underway there.
My boy, a father now. Another generation on this farm. Maybe we should expand.
We could leverage the farm.
At a residential estate. It'll pay itself off easily, so they'll be cared for even when you're gone. If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect you to structured lending solutions for wealth that supports generations to come. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. For years, I've always been a fan of some of the developments out of the Castle Lite brand. They've unlocked a number of things over the years, and they seem to be very good at unlocking things. This time around, we are unlocking Live Golf South Africa. That will be taking place in March of next year. I'm joined on the line by the brand director at Castle Lite, Colleen Duvenacher, to take a look at this and see what it's all about. Colleen, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. It seems there's no limit to what Castle Lite is willing to unlock and what you're willing to bring to South Africa. Congratulations on the partnership. Tell us about what this means for Castle Lite and for Live Golf.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thanks for having me. Super exciting partnership, really. I mean, as you say, Castle Lite has brought South Africa many experiences over the years, and fans know what to expect from the brand, specifically in the music space, as well as the sporting space. And this is a super exciting partnership for us. I suppose what Live is to golf is what Castle Lite is to beer. Really fan-centric, all about innovation, and I suppose democratizing the game of golf. So a very exciting space for Castle Lite to be in.
Colleen, let's take a look at the actual event and what will be taking place. Castle Lite, historically, with other events that you have been involved in and you've championed, have always focused on kind of bringing a unique spin or a unique flavor from a brand perspective to an event. This time around, partnering with a brand that already has its own kind of unique presence, how are you guys planning on leveraging that so that you can showcase the best?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. It's a perfect partnership where the two entities both have the fans at the heart of what we're trying to achieve here. So I think for Castle Lite, if you know like the Live Golf platform, we are there at the party hall, we are there at the entertainment moments, bringing the best in the business, both locally and internationally, in terms of artists, activations, experiences, to this platform in March.
Colleen, over the years, Castle and in general the SAB family have been very deliberate around some of the partnerships where it relates to sporting events. It's no secret that in South Africa, sport unites people more than it divides them, except of course if you're referring to the Soweto Derby, that's still up for contention. But how does that then start to filter into this kind of event? I mean, Live Golf is an international event, and to now be able to bring that into a South African market and to be able to showcase what sport means for South Africans, this seems like a match made in heaven for SAB.
Yes, I agree. I think SAB has got a long-standing commitment to the development of sport for over 130 years this year. And I think what's so special, and I think our commitment to the fans, is that our ambition is to make this the best live golf tournament that the world has ever seen. It's the first time it's on the continent. And I think it's such an incredible opportunity for SAB and Live Golf to showcase that South Africa is actually the best in hosting this type of world-class experience.
Well, we know we're the best in sport. 2025 has certainly proven that to the world across many, many sporting codes. Colleen, are there any surprises planned? I know you always have something up your sleeve as a team. I know you don't want to give too much away, but perhaps by March next year, people will have forgotten this conversation and we might need to remind them. What have you guys got planned?
Yeah, as I said, Jimmy, we have got some of the world's best performers coming to this. I can't give away names, but they really are the best in local and international. And the idea is to take it beyond just Dane City at the March event and to take it to more fans as more as we can. So there will be viewing parties, there will be experiences across the country where you can be a part of the action, even if you're not at the actual event itself.
Colleen, obviously from a brand perspective and from a company perspective, the SAB family has always taken pride in being able to offer these offer these events responsibly and be partners at a responsible level. Take me through just some of the responsible elements of this particular tournament and what you've done to just safeguard South Africans from your side.
Sure. Well, obviously there are many issues that we face. And this is a great platform where we encourage responsible drinking. So, of course, there will be things like the party hall and the experiences, but our role as Cast Light and as SAB is to deliver on the responsible drinking messaging. So, you know, e-hailing, park and ride facilities, all of those happen. And I think for me, Jimmy, this goes beyond just the product. And I think the focus of this experience is the sociability that something like this brings. And it's all about focusing on moments that are shared with friends that can create lasting memories. It brings people together in social occasions where they can kick back and enjoy new experiences. And we really do encourage all of our consumers, all of the fans, to do that responsibly.
The team at Castle Light and SAB have assured us that they will be delivering a Live Golf South Africa experience like none other, as this is the first time this takes place on the African continent. And if anyone knows anything about South Africans, the last thing you want to do is threaten them with a good time, especially in the month of December. We're going to leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the brand director at Castle Light, Colleen Dovenacher, for joining us to take a look at Live Golf South Africa, the tournament that will be taking place early in 2026. And Castle Light's involvement in it. This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope, it's brewing dreams,
it's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls, to brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation, for 130 years and forever. SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp, not for persons under the age of 18.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Third quarter GDP numbers were released today. The South African economy grew by 0.5% over the quarter. We're going to take a look at this, the implications thereof, and potentially whether or not we'll punch above 2% for the year. I'm joined on the line by lead economist at KPMG, Frank Blackmore, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Frank, lovely to have you back on the show. It's been a while. Good time to be catching up as well. It looks like we are on the right track for the first time, potentially in a very long time as an economy.
Yes, I can agree with you there. I think we're starting to see signs that we're moving in the right direction. The figures that came out today delivered, albeit low growth, at 0.5% real growth. It was broad-based, which meant all of the sectors of the economy contributed, all 9 of the 10 sectors. So agriculture, mining, manufacturing, construction, trade, transport, finance, government, personal services all contributed positively, which tells you the growth is not some lucky component of, let's say, mining having a good run or agriculture having a good run. It generally reflects sort of a broad turnaround of the economy. And we've had some good news recently. We've had a good medium-term budget. We came off the grey list. sovereign debt upgrade from one of the international organizations. We've had continued repo rate cuts throughout the year, ending in the most recent one in November. The stronger rand, all these things augur well for the economy moving forward.
Frank, when we speak of the economy moving forward, we have been looking at growth projections from the start of the year. These projections have been revised, most of the time revised to the downside. We're finally starting to see analysts and economists potentially revising these expectations to the upside. Where do we think this puts us for the year?
Still, unfortunately, according to me, it's going to give us below 1% growth. Because, I mean, if you take what the three quarters information that we have, first quarter only grew 0.1%. Second quarter has been adjusted upwards from 0.8 to 0.9 and now 0.5. So basically every quarter we're growing at an average of 0.5%. So even if we have a great fourth quarter, we'll probably end up at or below that 1% level for this year. And I guess that is in line with expectations. Why do I say this? Because our problems are not short-term problems like perhaps the Trump tariffs or a strong rand or whatever. They, you know, it's years of neglect in infrastructure of the economy that has kind of eroded the bases not only for industry but around our cities and towns, and that's where growth and productivity takes place. So we need to pile a lot more investment into our economy before we see or reap the rewards thereof. Of course, we can accelerate this as well by attracting more foreign direct investment, and more local investment, obviously, into these things. More money means, you know, more expenditure on those things that matter, and that will get us to higher numbers sooner. But for the near term, I think we're still going to be stuck in growth that we'd like a lot more of than we're going to get.
Frank, I like that you bring up the FDI conversation. I want to take a look at that and potentially some of the other factors that you touched on earlier, things like the grey listing removal. What does this now mean for South Africa on the global stage? I mean, we've struggled with economic growth for the longest time, and we have had many analysts, local and international, say that we might finally be turning the corner. Is it too soon, number one, to be optimistic about that? And number two, does that potentially make us even more attractive if that is to indeed be the scenario?
I think you're right there. It'll take a few quarters of positivity before investors start really taking note of South Africa. Remember, if you want to invest in the economy, you're investing. The type of investment we want is this foreign direct investment, where they buy actually physical machinery, equipment, buildings, and start manufacturing here. That is over a reasonably long investment horizon. And so the investors have to be pretty sure that over that investment horizon, things are going to look better to the economy. And one good year, particularly decent quarter as we're seeing now, doesn't do that yet. But as I said in the beginning, we're moving in that right direction. I think the importance of attracting foreign direct investment is sometimes underestimated. We sometimes see it as a luxury, these people from overseas bringing money to South Africa. But it's not only developing economies, it's not only African economies. All economies globally compete for foreign direct investment, including your biggest and most modern economies. And the reason for that is, you know, you can only finance so much investment locally depending on how much savings you're accumulating in your economy. And we know in South Africa, with, you know, a lot of people still living very challenging lives, we don't save enough in South Africa, so we're reliant on that foreign direct investment to make up the difference and help us accelerate sort of infrastructure development and growth.
Anyone that has any doubts around whether or not bigger countries need foreign direct investment should just take a look at the United States and the recent roadshow by President Trump to the Middle East. But we're going to have that conversation at another time. This one, we're going to leave on that note. Thanks so much to Frank for those insights and for the time. Frank Blackmore, lead economist at KPMG, joining us to reflect on South Africa's latest GDP data and what it says about the South African economy.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The segment is brought to you by Omnia, your agriculture partner for more than 70 years. We are once again taking a look at the world of farming and understanding some of the sustainable farming solutions that are being put out there into the market. I'm joined on the line by the marketing director for Omnia Fertilizer South Africa, Louis Stradom, to take a look at what it is that Omnia Holdings brings to the table. Louis, lovely to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. There's a term called biostimulants out there that farmers have been talking about and ranting about. Can you tell us what that is and why farmers are so interested in it and how it makes their lives easier?
Jimmy, good evening, and thank you for the opportunity. Biostimulants is a fascinating world that has opened up for us. Now, if you look at the definition of biostimulants, it's actually a natural substance or microbe that you can apply to plants, soil, or seeds. And it's not necessarily nutritional, but it enhances plant growth. It improves what we call nutrient use efficiency, which speaks to, you know, doing more with less. And it also improves the resilience of plants to stresses like heat stress, water stress, or even cold stress. So biostimulants is a substance that you apply which actually enhances plant growth, nutrient use, and the general health of the plant. And I think it's a world that we are digging into, which can make big differences in the growth of crop growing in future.
Louis, the last time you and I spoke, we caught up about the concept of nutriology, which is, as you mentioned in our previous conversation, something you've actually coined as the Omnia business. How do biostimulants fit into that nutriology model? And is it beneficial for farmers to be considering these?
Yeah. So the nutriology model has got two goals, Jimmy, at the end of the day. First of all is to increase our nutrient use efficiency. In other words, to grow a bigger crop with less nutrients and use it more efficiently. And the second leg is then to increase our water use efficiency. And the term that I like to use is crop per drop. In other words, increase the crop that we grow per drop. Now, one of the pillars or a few of the pillars of the nutriology model is obviously our products, and biostimulants will fall under one of the products. But I think in addition to that is our R&D, which is a pillar, and also our services. And included in the services is our agronomic advice, our analytical services through our laboratories. And with that combined, under the nutriology model, we bring a solution to farmers, not necessarily a product, but a solution that will eventually increase the return on his investment that he has made into growing his crop.
And farmers are desperately looking for that return on investment because the global supply chains have been on the receiving end of some tough times of late. Louis, I want to get your thoughts around what Omnia is doing from a reliability perspective to ensure that farmers continue to be able to access the right inputs that they need for their products. I mean, you touched on the fact that sustainability is important from a farming perspective, and consistency, I imagine, also forms part of that. How is Omnia helping farmers remain consistent and reliable in their produce?
Yeah. If we hone then down, you know, from a supply chain perspective, let's talk about fertilizer product as such. I think the listeners is aware that we import about 80% of all nutrients that's applied through fertilizer. It's imported into our country. So, I mean, everybody knows about the havoc that's there been in supply chains around the world. And we work very hard with our very agile supply chain department to ensure that we overcome all these challenges. I think us being for 73 years in the market, we are well known globally as a very prominent supplier of nutrients, not necessarily in South Africa, but in the SADC region. But we know the business to a large extent, and I always say we've got a gut feel about the business. And then obviously with our demand planning and with what we see happening in the world, we take positions on product to ensure that we have the product in stock to cater for early rains, late rains, higher demand, lower demand. And because, Jimmy, we've got big production facilities locally, we have the agility to adapt to changing. You know, what we saw in the past 2 years, farmers changed from maize to soya, which is a complete change in the product that they need. And because we produce ourselves in country and locally, we can adapt to those changes. Supply chain and the availability of product is one of the core principles that we work very hard not to disappoint our customers.
Louis, something else that you and I spoke about in our last conversation was around data. And you said that that was one of the things that excited you and the Omnia Group the most around being able to use artificial intelligence to provide reliable data to the farming communities and to the farming clients that you serve. Can we look at that in a bit more detail and just what that means for the farming ecosystem, but also what it allows farmers to be able to achieve?
Yeah, data, I think from my previous interview, you know, you can see the passion that I have for data and artificial intelligence and the possibilities that that brings back to the farm. Let me give you one example. You know, not too long ago, we had satellites and we've got images, which is 1 hectare resolutions, and it comes across every 14 days. Today, we sit with satellites which can have sub-square meter resolution, and the availability of the images is daily. Now, the amount of data that we generate with our computing capability just increases the possibilities with what we can do with these images. You know, as I said, is that, yes, you know, urea and ammonia and nitrogen is a very core raw material. But I think in coming back to the nutriology model, using our agronomists and enabling them with the technology like satellite images supported by artificial intelligence, we can go back to our farmers and use this data to give them advice, not to rectify a problem, but to preempt a problem. And if we can do that, you know, then we bring real value back to the farm gate.
Bringing real value back to the farm and to farmers, that is what Omnia Holdings intends to do. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the marketing director of Omnia Fertilizer South Africa, Louis Stradom, for joining us to take a look at their innovations in the farming space and what it means for farmers. The segment was brought to you by Omnia. Your harvest, our greatest achievement.
On the farm, every season brings challenges. Will the rain come? Will the soil deliver enough? But I'm not facing those challenges alone. With Omnia by my side, I receive more than fertilizer. I have access to science, innovative solutions, and people who care about my success.
At Omnia, your best harvest is our greatest achievement. Together we grow more than crops, we grow futures. Contact Omnia today and start growing your future.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain. And the company's called Mesh Trade to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
And that's the show for today, folks. If you've missed any of the conversations, of course, they will be made available as podcasts for you to catch up on, so you can go back and re-listen to them. It is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Hose and the SAFM News team are standing by to give us the latest round of evening news. They'll be followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. So from my side, good night.